Shalom, I'm sitting here this evening with Akiva. Akiva, how old are you?
27.
27. How long have you been learning Torah?
27 years.
27 years. Okay, the topic for tonight's discussion is on perspectives. We're going to try to understand and explain how all existence is a simple one, as opposed to the normal perspective where we see everything as all separate little things. And any questions you would have or will have tonight will be greatly appreciated. So first, we want to talk about existence. Do you see existence all as a simple one, or do you see it as many things stuck together that make up the one?
Well, I mean, I was definitely brought up with the understanding that there are separations between people, not just in reference to our own dalamas, our own enclosures, our own walls that we put around ourselves, but more along the lines of, we're all separate, and there's differences between you and me, and there was never a real connection between myself and others, as well as myself and other creations.
Right, but what is the nature of existence? Is all existence a simple one?
That's a tough question, but it seems, now, I mean, at this point in my life, I look at the world more in reference to, how would I say in a comfortable manner, I am God. I am part of God.
Okay, but now you're saying, if you say that you are God or you are part of God, if you're saying you are God, you're going to have to explain how you created the universe because you're only 26. And if you say you're a part of God, you're going to have to explain how God has parts. Do you understand the difficulty with saying God has parts?
Okay, yeah.
Right, since God is everywhere, we can't part. Here, let's take a good example as a loaf of bread. In order to part a loaf of bread, we have to introduce something there to make those parts called parts. What would that be, for instance?
A knife, a hand.
But that's the thing that would do it. But after we end up having done it, we see something different about it, so now we say they are parted.
Right, the slices.
Slices. But you could slice it and they all be stuck together and you wouldn't see that they're parts.
A complete separation.
And what do we need to have a complete separation?
No connection between one and the other.
Okay, well, we're getting closer. We still haven't got there. What would have to be there so there would be no connection between one and the other?
Ends.
Ends. But you have an end on both ends of the bread anyway. It's not
separate. Well, an end to each piece.
Okay. I'm trying to lead you to understand what I'm getting at. I'm sure you understand as soon as you do. In order for there to be two pieces, you have to have a separation. In order for there to be separation, there has to be something in between these two pieces that is not what these two pieces are made of.
Oh, okay. Air or nothing.
Air.
Something else.
Something other than bread.
Than what it is, right.
Okay, now, let's get talking about God right off the bat. Let's just talk more physically, like the all. Can we say there's an all? A one all?
Okay.
Good. Now, can we have anything other than the all?
No.
So then, if there's nothing other than the all, when I point at you, am I pointing at the all?
Yes, without pointing at a part of the all.
Okay, so then you're the all?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
I am because I don't want to go into, again, a part. If I use the word part, then I might include the word separation. I'm trying not to.
So all of it is
made up of its parts.
Okay, let's stop right there. Let's say we have a pizza pie,
mm-hmm.
and we cut it in a cooked baked pizza. We cut it into 10 pieces. Now, is the pie made out of the pieces, or are the pieces made out of the pie?
I would say the pieces are of the pie.
Are made out of the pie.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not like you say where the whole is made of the parts.
Well, the whole is the sum of its parts.
Well, in a car, that's true.
Right.
But in the all, that's not true. There's a religion called Taoism that has a symbol of a circle with an S in the middle,
mm-hmm.
with white on one side and black on the other. You've
mm-hmm.
seen that symbol, the yin-yang. And they teach you by that these are the two basic forces in existence. In order for there to be peace, these two forces have to come together in harmony. So basically, they're saying the one is made out of two.
Right.
Now, we're saying, no. The one is not made out of two, but the two are made out of one.
Right.
Okay, so now like your left hand and your right hand.
Part of me.
Okay, but if they would be parted, you couldn't wiggle them.
Correct. They're attached parts.
They're not even attached parts, because look at it as your skin. You see your skin is all one skin?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see any of your skin as attached parts.
The skin is one whole.
One whole.
As opposed to the my body? Finger skin and my toe skin.
But it's still one skin.
Skin.
Okay. We're going to have to understand the difference between distinction and separation. That's a big one.
Okay.
Let's look at this a few different ways from perspectives. Like, what is the relationship with you between form and matter? Form and matter. Let's take a fist.
Okay.
So what's the form?
The form is five fingers.
Fold it over. That's the form of the fist.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the matter of the fist would be?
What it's made up of.
Which would say skin and bones. Okay, fine. Now, that's one way we can look at the hand. We can either look at it by its shape, or we can look at it by its matter. But let's look at that same hand in a different way. Let's look at it like, what's the relationship between the energy that fills the hand? I'm not talking about the strength that you can use in it, although that's certainly an aspect of it. But we say that everything's made out of energy in some way, compared to the matter of the hand. So the energy, we'd say, with the electrons and neutrons floating around, whatever it is, or whatever makes energy, waves. And then the matter would be the skin, the flesh, and the bones. That's another way to look at it. Instead of form versus matter, we looked at it, energy versus matter. But now what would happen if the gravity, everything that holds, the thing that holds everything together would cease? What would happen to the hand?
Then there would be separation.
Well, but the things that, like you want to say the hand would separate from the body, or the fingers would separate from the hand, what do you mean? Explain yourself.
Could be the muscles would separate from the bone.
Okay, but what's gonna, what would hold the muscles together and the bones together if that power would cease? Nothing. They can't see your head shaking left and right.
Okay, I don't,
nothing. They would, everything would just cease to exist.
Right.
So we see what's really here, even though we experience it as matter, it really is a power holding it all into its form. So we're experiencing the physical world, and it's formed in a formed perspective, where if this energy or the power that's holding it together would cease to do so, it would just cease.
I think I got that.
Well, we'll work on it more. We have, okay, now, I want to get back to the point of whether or not you are the all for a second.
Okay.
So how can you answer that? Do you have any way you're comfortable in answering? Are you the all, Akira?
I am of the all.
Okay, good. But if I touch you, am I touching the all?
Yes.
So you are the all.
I'm of the all.
But everything's of the all. Yes, where is the all?
Everything.
Everything. So everything's the all. Then if I touch you, I'm touching the all.
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. You're the all?
I'm of the all.
But you just
anything you touch will be of the all. You are the all touching the all.
So then you are the all.
I'm of the all.
Why did you say, I am the all touching of the all?
No, you are of the all touching of the all.
Okay, is there an all and an of the all, or is that one thing?
Well, based on our perception...
No. Whoa. Let's not base it on perception. Let's base it on reality.
Based on reality, there is a separation. There's air between you and me.
Right, but now you're using your body perspective. Remember, we just said that if this power would cease, everything would cease. So it's just a continuum. You're looking, okay, let's use light for an example for a moment. The light in the room the human eye can't see. But if we bend the light through a prism, on the far side of the bend, we'll see seven colors. Okay? Now, imagine the rainbow is in front of you, and with the index finger of your left hand, point to the red light, and with the index finger of your right hand, point to the blue light. Now, how many lights are you pointing at?
I'm pointing at parts of one.
Okay, but it's not parted. It's just one light.
So how do I look at this?
You're pointing at two colors, one light.
Two colors, so why is that not of the light?
Because it is the light. It's not only of the light, it is the light. You're making a further furtherance away that doesn't exist.
So based on that thought and idea, I am of the all, and I am the all.
So if you're the all, this is what we're trying to work on. By saying you're of the all, that's not going to come to the conclusion we want to come to. That won't make you understand what I'm trying to communicate to you. Because everything's of the all, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we can understand it all to be one. That's what we're trying to understand. So if you are the all, how can you explain that? Because you're not me. But the all is me, and the all is you.
Right.
So how can you be the all and not be me?
Because I'm looking at two different colors and one light.
Okay.
And one light. Two different colors, comma, one light.
Okay, therefore, why explain how that applies to you and me?
I'm looking at two different beings and one all.
Why did you have to say and one all?
Comma, one all.
Okay, so...
We're not separate from the all.
Ah, so we're not separate now.
Separate from the all.
Then we're not separate from the all. Then the all is one continuous all that goes everywhere?
Yeah.
Equally?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Now, if we call this all God, you're comfortable with that, then is it fair to say you're God?
It's one of those yes and no questions. God isn't a form. God doesn't have form, but my form is God.
You're not making sense in logical words the way you said that. I know it's difficult to come to this conclusion, but you have to understand how to say it better than that. So keep trying. Try a different way to say it.
God is the all.
Okay.
I am the all.
Whoa, okay.
A equals A, therefore B. If A, therefore B. If B, therefore C. If A, therefore C. I am God.
Okay, now you walk down the street and tell somebody that. What are they going to do to you?
Probably ignore me.
At best. At best, ignore you. Okay, the truth is that God is all. But when it's difficult for the blue light to say, I am the light, because the blue light is identified by its color only, like the finger and the thumb. The finger and the thumb identify themselves as their mere form, so the finger doesn't know it's the hand. Because the finger only knows its finger, the thumb only knows its thumb. But the truth is, if you touch the finger, you're touching the hand. Yes or no?
Makes sense.
Okay. Now, do you have any questions on any of this up to now?
Confusion more than questions.
Okay.
We'll
try it. Let's see. Maybe we can unconfuse you.
Trying to say that God is all.
Okay.
That's an equality. God is all.
Okay.
I am... I guess if we use back to the idea, the reference of the prism, I am a reflection of the all.
But that reflection of the all is also the all.
But if I would call myself the all, nobody would understand
what you're saying.
Right.
It sounds very arrogant, egotistical to say such a thing. Obviously, you can't be the all because you're not the moon. But the problem is that people are using different perspectives when they speak. If you're saying, I, and you mean Akiva, and you say, Akiva is the all, and people don't understand it. But if you're saying, I, and you mean the one I that fills all, then of course Akiva is the all. Because the all is a Akiva. If you turn around the other way and say, God is me, God is all, it's easier for people to understand what you're saying.
So in conceptually, you and I sitting here right now, the separation of a foot or two, everything that's in between us, the microphone, the air, the chairs, the plastic, the table, and so on and so forth, and you and I is part of that I.
It's not part of
it.
It's the one eye that is acting as all this.
And there is no
other.
And there is no you and me.
There is you and me. Without that, of course there's a you and me.
So
we're not saying there's no blue and red.
There's just the perspective.
But those are one of the perspectives, a valid perspective, a genuine perspective. We're not saying these perspectives do not exist. They exist for a very good reason, with a strong function. But we're saying don't be fooled by that perspective of colors alone and therefore fail to see the light.
Just like the perspective, the difference between the chair and the table.
They're
when
totally
you see them from the outside,
they're totally different.
They're totally different. But if you look
at existence.
Closer.
Look at existence. Look at existence is smooth, one everywhere.
Meaning what?
Okay, let's do it this way then. When you look at a body with your 20/20 vision, you see a person. When you look at that body and put a big microscope in between you and that body, you see molecules. Scientists tell us that the body is 99.9% empty space. It's a little side information there. Now, these molecules move so fast that the body appears solid. what scientists tell us is mostly vast empty space. Now, these molecules are not solid either. If we magnify them and make them very, very, very large, we see they're filled with zillions of atoms. Get in the picture? Okay. Now, which are you then? Atoms, molecules, or man?
Depends on from which perspective I'm looking at.
It will depend upon which perspective you're looking at as to what you call it. But what are you?
I'm all.
You're all of those.
Right.
Okay, now are those three or those one?
Those are one.
They're one at different depths.
Right.
At three different depths of perception, we can look at this one that you are and see you as and see you differently. But it's still one.
Right.
Okay, are these atoms solid? No.
Yeah.
Blow them up real, real big. Remember, we're not cutting them in half and having half an atom, but we're making the atom so big we can see what it really is.
Right.
And we see zillions of what they call quarks. Blow the quarks up real big, we see zillions of gluons. Blow the gluons real big, we see zillions of something else. Let's keep doing this process on and on. Every time we come up with some form, shape, or some identifiable thing, enlarge it big. What do you think we finally come to?
Nothing.
Exactly. Because the world is being made something from nothing. Not only was it made something from nothing a long time ago, it's an ongoing, continual process. And now what we're looking at is this something aspect, the something perspective of this. But just like you said, you are man and molecules. Which are you, something or nothing?
Well, something and nothing.
Both. At different perspectives, at different depths, we'd call you either something or nothing. The something is a valid, real something with an important job to do here on Earth, but it's made out of nothing. Okay, now when you use your nothing eyeglasses, where you're seeing from the perspective of nothing, then you look at you and me and the space in between us, you see it's constant. It's all just a simple one, zero. A constant, nothing. Then when you back off and from your microscopes and you're seeing now distinction, now you're assuming that the distinction is implying separation. But the truth of the matter is, it's constant one. Okay, but what? Now,
what is the purpose and is there a purpose of that nothing? What are we recognizing by recognizing this nothing?
Okay, what we're recognizing is the nature of reality. So we're not fooled by reality, and that allows us to be more, for instance, compassionate to each other if we realize we are one. We're recognizing that when the Torah says that the world is made something from nothing, it's teaching us the truth. We're realizing the relative importance of the world and the relative unimportance of the world, that this is just a passing phase that we're in right now, that we're experiencing. And we're more than the distinctions between us, but these distinctions are valid. The world is a true existence. We have a valid purpose in being here. We have to accomplish that purpose if we're going to succeed.
So does that mean that we have to bring ourselves from nothing to something?
God does that. From Jews, now Hashem, the creator of all, he's constantly doing that. Look at it this way. If you have a bright light coming out of the ceiling, one bright light, and you put a big sheet of thick plastic in between, under that light, a couple feet under that light, and we're sitting under that sheet of plastic. At that stage, what would we see?
An expanse of light.
Well, it'd be dark. It'd be dark. We wouldn't see light.
I didn't know how black it was. Okay.
Dark plastic, okay. Right. Okay, now we're going to put holes, four holes in that plastic.
I'm going to think of four lights.
But you're really seeing?
Why is it oval?
You're seeing one light. Not only of one light. You don't see, now when you look at the light in the room, I'm seeing of one light. Put the plastic in your, get the image again.
Now,
grab the plastic and take it out of the room. You say, there's one light
there.
I'm not looking at of one light.
Right.
And I put the plastic back in. You're still looking at one light, but it's four shapes now, four beams.
Right.
Zohar uses an example of a house with two windows, and the sunshine is pouring in.
Right.
From inside the house, someone could say, oh, there are two lights coming in. But we know it's only one light.
Right.
Okay? So now, back onto the, you have four beams of light. Now we're going to put another sheet of plastic under that and put many, many holes in it and make them all different shapes and put cellophane colors, paper over them so the light will come through and be a different color. Now we're looking under that sheet and we see hundreds, thousands or millions of different shapes and colors, right?
Yeah.
One way over there is blue, one over here is green, this is round, this is a circle, this is square, this is a Jewish star. And no matter how many beams of light we're looking at, we're still looking at one light. Okay, now each time that light gets further down and down and farther away, we'll put another sheet of glass, they can do it again and again and again. It's still that one powerful light, but it's getting thinner and thinner. We're getting a thinner ray, a thinner beam of that, okay? Understand?
Okay,
now at the very bottom where we're standing right now, the amount of that light, that existence, that power, the existence that's filling our consciousness is a very small ray of a ray of a ray of the light way up above, so to speak. Now I'm using this as an example, as a metaphor, and metaphors don't hold true, completely true when we're talking about God. But now what's happening is that since we're so much of a ray of a ray of a ray, where we don't see like God sees from above all the sheets of plastic, now there's darkness, now we have free choice. If we could see above the plastic, we'd never do anything wrong. We'd never make mistakes. We could see the outcome of all our actions. But since that we're down lower, 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 now we're blinded to a certain degree. We're limited to 20/20 vision instead of maybe 100/100 vision. So that gives us free will. If we could see the answers to the test questions, there'd be no free will. But now that we're down here in the human state, although that human soul is still Hashem filling us, but since it's in looking through a human vessel, it can only see 20/20 now.
Right.
Okay?
So, I mean, if I, can I go try to go one step further?
Okay, let's see if it works.
A different way? Something that I saw somewhere about using this metaphor in a different framework of reflection.
Okay.
I think it was you who discussed it, actually. Where the sun reflects on the water.
Okay.
And if the water, where the sun reflects on the water, and if the water is calm and smooth, you see a reflection of one sun.
Right.
When the water becomes windy and choppy, and I would use the word confused,
okay,
that's when you see
many
separate reflections, and you and the human perception, the 20/20 vision that's not looking up, it's looking down, will then see what they think are many lights. What they think are many lights.
Right. But?
But it's
still
there,
one light.
It's still one light.
Okay.
To go from there, to go beyond that, would it be fair to say that the reason to use a separate idea than filters to say that the world is different simply because confusion has been, like confusion is a what's the word I'm looking for, an enzyme, something that starts something, a catalyst.
Catalyst.
So the catalyst, the confusion would be the catalyst. Confusion has been added to this light, to this being, and we are perceiving each other as being different simply based on confusion.
Okay. But the Zohar, the Bereshit in the Torah, it starts and uses that illustration of confusion, says there was confusion. It's one of the earlier stages. And it's a one way to look at it. And what's happening is Hashem is manifesting himself by covering himself. He's covering the zero by forming and shaping into something. But definitely confusion is a good way to explain what's going on in the world. We're looking at things as distinct. Don't be fooled by thinking they're separate. But what was that point? Why did you want to bring that up?
To see if I was getting the thought clearly, simply because I'm looking at this world as, for instance, God is that one or that zero. Let's use the phrasing that you mean.
Well, we're not talking of zero, we're talking about unmanifest. I wasn't suggesting that God is zero.
That God is
beyond all this.
Beyond all. And where God is at, quote unquote, that light that starts at the top, there is no confusion. There is nothing. It's calm and simple, and therefore it's one. But when it gets down to us, it's gone through.
Okay, what you're saying is valid, but I'm having trouble seeing how it's going to help people by the way you're saying it. When before the soul comes into the body, it's not limited by body vision. So let's say up there, so to speak, before it comes lower, it can see its all the answers, know what's going on, understand the difference between holiness and non-holiness. But then when that same soul comes into the body, is looking through these man perspective, then it's only seen 20/20, and now it has limited vision. That's why there's choice and free will in the world. The teaching, one of the greatest mystics, Jewish mystics that ever lived, wrote about, he wanted to explain how it could be possible that if before creation all there is God, and God fills the whole place, how was there any room to put anything later? And he came up with the idea of Tzimtzum. Tzimtzum has many definitions. One of them is contraction. And many people mistakenly think that Hashem contracted himself in such a way to leave a place devoid of him, God forbid, where he then put creation. But that's a misunderstanding of the teaching. The proper way to understand it is the definition of Tzimtzum is that God covers himself. And what we're looking at now is God covering himself by taking this nothing and forming it into something. Does that help at all? Or does that make more confusion for you?
No, I think it makes... It makes a little bit simpler.
What is the real question that you want to discuss, or what you want to bring out that you're trying to have me understand?
Are we just confused? Are we not seeing what is reality?
No, we are seeing reality, but we're only seeing this perspective of reality. When we see colors, the colors are real. There are religions in the East that teach that this is not a real world, that it's an illusion. And the Torah doesn't teach that at all. The Torah says that we are perhaps deluded, but the world is a real world. If not, then Torah and mitzvahs would have no real value to them. That making doing a sin or not doing a sin would be, if you do a sin in a dream, nothing really happened. But we say it's not a dream. It's like a dream, but it's not a dream. Because we're deluded by what we see into thinking everything is separate. To be separate, in order to be separate, would be to really be arrogant. It denies God's being filling the whole universe. That's more arrogant than saying, I am God. Right?
I am without God.
If you, God forbid, would say, be without God, you're stopping God. Yeah. That's not possible. God is everywhere.
It's just in reality, it's that there's... Let's see, Puri,
English?
A filament on top of me, a skin, so to say, that is giving...
The appearance?
The appearance or form...
Of form?
Of the all.
But it's always the all, whether it's in form or not form, whether it's of you or whatever it is. You can't. That's not enough of a distinction to make your point. Whatever you point to, you're pointing at the all. I think almost anybody would agree to that. So what's happening is that since your life force is being funneled into such a small mental capacity, human capacity, that's what allows for the delusion of separateness and thinking that someone can get away with something, like someone might steal something and because he doesn't get caught, he thinks he got away with it. But in truth, he created the wave of theft in the world, which he started, and it's going to come right back to him one way or the other. So let me ask, how are you going to answer this question if somebody comes up to you and says, Akiva, are you God?
Yes.
Now, how's that going to help him? He's going to laugh at you. You're going to have to answer this in a way where the person asking such a question could be comfortable.
Okay.
How about saying God is all when somebody asks that question? And let him come to the conclusion.
Uh-huh.
God is all?
That's all.
Akiva, are you the all?
God is all.
Okay. And the all is all, including me? How could it not be?
Right.
But Akiva, the all is on the moon, and you're not on the moon, so how can you be the all? How would you answer that?
God is there, God is here at the same time.
Okay, all. Use all in the word, because I asked you about all. If you're
all
the all...
All is there, and all is here at the same time.
No, all is everywhere.
Right.
Right. So like when you touch your shoulder, you're not touching your knee, but you're still touching Akiva.
Yeah.
Okay, so same thing. When you're touching Akiva, you're touching the moon, you're still touching the all. Because the all is everywhere.
Okay.
Okay? And God is the all. Any questions up to now? Anything we could talk about that you'd be interested in discussing?
Well, one thing that I want to discuss, I mean, I think as a derivative of this, I don't know if it's a appropriate derivative, something that I see as a derivative, is if this is so, what is my responsibility to you?
Okay, that's a very good question. There's a perspective, a so-called level that a man could arise to called fear of God. It's like a station that certain great souls can come to. That means that person always, in all his action, fears God. He knows that God's standing above him, and within him, and through him, but at that perspective, he's looking at God as the king. Now, if you could attain to such a position, would you step on my toe on purpose?
No.
Okay. Ah, exactly. Yeah, you got my next question answered already, because you fear what?
I fear God.
You'd be afraid that God would step on your toe or your head or something else.
Somewhere.
Okay, that's the high, high, high station of fear of God. But now let's say you understand the conversation we've been talking about tonight, that all existence is one, all existence is God. Would you step on my toe on purpose?
Stepping on my toe.
Ah, love of God. But actually, don't call it your toe. Call it
on the
one toe. It's as if you're stepping on your own toe, but don't confuse my toe with your toe.
Now, from the perspective that I'm seeing, it's your separate toe.
Not separate.
But if it's your toe, not
Akiva's toe.
Not my toe. But
right.
If you pull yourself out of it a little bit,
and look at the perspective of one.
As
one.
One.
Therefore, you wouldn't want to hurt me. That's love of God. That's even higher than fear of God. So your responsibility to me is both at the level of fear of God and both at the level of love of God. But now you have to use your right hand as your right hand and your left hand as your left hand. Just because all existence is one doesn't mean we treat it all the same. It's a big mistake that some people like to make and say it's all the same. It's not all the same. Your right hand is not the same as your left hand, but they are one. You and I are not the same. You are you and I am me. You have your house and I have my house. You have your family and I have my family. But we are one.
Okay, so taking that to somewhat similar but separate ground as well.
Not separate, distinct.
Not in our discussion.
Okay, oh, okay.
Taking our discussion.
Okay.
I've always thought in my head that I don't want to get onto this topic exactly, but maybe it will help with other things. Difference between men and women in the world. And I always look at it as the true definition of separate but equal. You have your tafkid, I have my tafkid, the doctor, you have your responsibility, your job, your purpose, I have my job, my responsibility, my purpose. And you and I, a doctor or a lawyer or a housewife, each one is equal. It is one.
Well, you're making a big mistake. Exactly the thing I was trying to explain to you. To say it's all one doesn't say it's all equal. In a secular marriage, a man and woman come together as equal partners, 50-50 partners. They have to respect each other as 50-50 partners. I did the dishes yesterday, you do the dishes today. In a spiritual marriage, the two come together and make one. One body, four hands, four legs, 20 kids, whatever you're fortunate enough to have, take care of whoever can do the best. All being one doesn't mean all is equal. Your right hand is not equal to your left hand. A doctor is not equal to a lawyer. It depends. If you're up for trial, God forbid, then the lawyer is, you don't want a doctor representing you. Right? But if you're on the operating table, you don't want a lawyer doing it. So they're not equal. Each individual, the nature is explained by its being. By looking at the shape, you'll see what its function is. What does it do? What's its purpose? Some people come into the world to be builders, others come into the world to be brains, to be lovers, to be priests, whatever the particular person's job is. It's all one, but it's not all the same. It's not all equal. Men and women are one, but they're not equal. Women are much better at some things than men are. And men are better at some things than women are. But if they will each fill their own role, like a healthy body, then the entire body will be well. We don't want the kidneys to try to be the heart, and the heart to try to be the liver. The heart has to be a great heart, and the kidneys have to be great kidneys, and the feet have to be great feet, and then there'll be a healthy body.
Just clarify something you just mentioned, just want to make sure it's clear.
Okay.
If something doesn't function, it doesn't take them out of being
one. No.
It just isn't functioning.
It's unhealthy, and sometimes you have to cut it out, and sometimes you have to put medicine on it, the different things, the way you have to treat it to make it better.
But it doesn't take them out of the being.
No, it's impossible. Right. And if it doesn't exist, there's no sense talking about it. Okay? One more question before we run out? It's been very nice talking to you, and I hope to see you again. And maybe you'll bring your family for Shabbos. That'll be fun.
I'll do that. I'll definitely do that.
Okay. Have a good night.
Thank you.